Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We talk about UFOs and Sasquatch and ghosts and near-death experiences and conspiracies. I'm Johnny Manson, along with MUFON investigator Cherie DeSouce.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
Are UFOs real?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. There's so much proof that it's amazing that the average person hasn't started yawning yet. The UFOs have broken the barrier of boredom, I think, you know? I mean, the United States Navy and the Air Force are seeing all these UFOs darting around in our skies and the atmosphere, and people don't even budge. They don't even, it's like, we know they're there.
I saw this show, a lot of people with their like cell phones, they're seeing stuff in the sky and they're recording it. Some of them could look like drones, but then there's some that are defying what drones can do.
Oh, absolutely.
Or they're
absolutely
bigger, or they're smaller, or mm-hmm. they're just... Are those aliens, or is that our government technology that they're not telling us about?
Well, they're both. I think they are telling us in subtle ways.
Yeah.
And in not so subtle ways. We talked about the patent that the Navy took out on a spaceship that goes from underwater to our atmosphere to space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working. It's a working vehicle. And it's triangle. So, yeah, we do know, but there are so many different alien races that have decided that Earth is like Disneyland.
Right, it's like the Walmart of DNA, right?
Exactly. We're totally the Walmart of DNA. And they come and they check us out and they get told by the aliens that have been here since ancient times that, you know, don't mess with our humans.
I saw an episode of Ancient Aliens over the weekend, and I don't put a lot of confidence in the show, but they do have interesting information. And one of the theories is that the reptilians are living underground, and with the more recent sightings of reptilian people is that they're slowly coming back to the surface.
They have a base of them in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big hole that Google Earth had to cover mm-hmm. with pretend snow. For a long time, you could see the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there is a cave system under the ice, and there is a geophysical, like volcanic area that the reptilians live in with their ships and that kind of thing. It's a whole base. And humans, a few, live there among them. There are hybrid reptilian humans out there,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting. I've seen shows that have these reptilian beings, humans, and they show up sometimes at the conferences and conventions and things like that
mm-hmm.
to speak because they have certain qualities that humans generally don't have genetically.
There were theories that I think the alien hunter, yeah, he told us the last time he was on the show that the aliens, like the grays, they're hatched, created, whatever, but they're more like a drone bee, like, you know, emotionless, and they're brought here to do the bidding of another species, like a reptilian.
Right. There are beings like the reptilians that actually clone grays.
Right.
And, of course, that's going to happen. I mean, if you're a civilization that can create a being mm-hmm. that can do your bidding, of course you will. I mean, we're looking into robots.
Right.
So, you know, so far we've been held back from cloning because it's unethical. But China's doing it. Russia's doing it.
And now they're proposing rights for robots now, too. So,
You know, if you're getting into AI and you have a being that is self-aware, you know, you could maybe talk about that down the road. But, you know, we can't even get people to take care of their damn dogs.
Right.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah.
You know, what are they going to do about their darn robot? Right. Oh, bad robot. I mean, come on. Don't put that oil on my carpet.
So, you know, when we're talking about, like, the praying mantis alien, I'm thinking, gosh, where would a praying mantis alien come from? Far, far away. And that's when Daryl Sims said, think about it. Where do you get praying mantis DNA? I'm like, well, the only place I would know is Earth. He's like, yeah, Earth is the cosmic Walmart of DNA.
Yes.
So they probably got the DNA from here to make those or to create that praying mantis alien or that reptilian alien or whatever, unless it's, you know, millions and billions and billions of light years away. But I was like going, wow, that kind of makes sense. Maybe they got everything here to make all these things that we see. I don't know. What do you think on that?
I think you're onto something.
I'm not onto it, but I thought it was interesting, but, you know.
It is interesting.
I wish it was my theory, but I can't claim it as my own.
Well, there are rarely really new things anymore. I mean, you have to play upon what you know. I believe that if you're an alien race and you are in this solar system and you're staying in this solar system, where are you going to find the DNA to create the help that you think you need?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to get it from a planet that has water and has beings that are alive. So, you know, maybe that's the last great scientific adventure for an alien race. What else is there?
One theory was that we were brought here by aliens as slaves to mine for gold.
Yeah, I've heard that too. You know, that might have been a small section of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that we were genetically corrected.
Mm-hmm.
That the life on this planet was kind of funneled into a certain way so that we had the ability to stand up, to be strong, to be able to carry things, have a good musculature, enough intelligence so that we could understand orders.
And take care of ourselves.
And take care of ourselves, right. Wipe our own butts, you know.
Right.
So I do believe that we were corralled, and hey, you know, you're going to go in this direction from now on.
Right.
But then there's offshoots. There's always offshoots into the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, okay, you know, if I take a spider and I put some of that DNA into this human, maybe I'll get something that could make its own web. Or maybe it'll, you know, to give it attributes that you wouldn't normally find in a being.
Like a superhero.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have living superheroes on our planet.
Yeah.
Human living superheroes.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. Like the show you were talking about, earlier you were talking about the program you and Daisy watch.
Yeah, Paranormal Caught on Camera.
Exactly. That one had a camera on a Russian, like a grandmother, and a young girl. And it was winter. They had, you know, wintry clothes on. And he was looking for his dog, and he turned the corner, and he had his camera because he was playing with his dog. And the little girl was flying above her grandmother.
I saw that.
Right. Okay, so immediately you think, no, come on, where are the lines? Where are the wires?
Right.
I don't think that babushka had any wires, you know? That that ability has been written in history over time.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's a part human mind,
mm-hmm.
being able to levitate, and part having the ability to part yourself from gravity. So, yeah, I really believe there are superhumans on this planet.
That was really strange looking, though.
Yeah, it really was. It insults us in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
When we see things that don't mesh with the world around us that we know,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is walking and he stops from stepping on a cockroach, and the cockroach says,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. And he looks off at somebody riding a bicycle, and they're aliens.
Right.
We don't observe everything that goes on our planet.
Right.
We just don't. Scientists do. You know, they pick a specialty, and they say, I'm going to learn about everything I can about insects.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out all these really weird, strange things about insects. Which takes me back to the insect humanoids. They have been seen all over this planet.
Right.
And they choose not to interact with us. They'll turn away and move away.
You mean like Sasquatch do?
Exactly.
Because they turn away and walk the
other
way.
They do the predator thing and kind of blend into the scenery, and
right. You
just don't see them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you've got somebody after you with a shotgun, you might over time develop skills that you didn't know you could do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, geez. We do things like that in the military.
Yeah.
We put on a suit that there's a name for that suit. I can't think of it right now. I read an article about it over the weekend. Not a duffer. Duffer suit? Duffy? Anyway, it's for sharpshooters and men assassins, basically.
Oh, okay.
They put on something that looks like the ground around them, and they can lie there.
A ghillie suit?
That's it.
Ghillie suit,
ghillie suit. And, you know, we've learned how to become part of our environment where we can't be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Who says that that's not something that we could do without the actual suit and just make ourselves part of the scenery?
You familiar with, I know you are, let's see if I get the name right, Grindlesham incident? It was in England.
Yeah.
Military.
Yes.
And he touches the UFO, and it imprints the binary code.
And he starts, writing symbols and binary code. Yeah.
Was that a hoax, or was that legit?
Yeah, that's totally legit.
And one of the, I think, messages, I don't know if it was in the binary code or on the UFO, was something like planetary observation of planetary advancement. Pretty much, they're just checking us out, seeing how far we've gone along.
Exactly.
So could we just be here as a science experiment?
We could be.
Yeah.
But I think we're much more than that.
Well, yeah, our egos.
Well, we are the center of the universe. I don't think that's unusual. And I don't think we're the first planet to be under scrutiny of an alien race.
Right.
I mean, how could we be? Okay, let's go through this again. Earth 101. We are not the only planet that has life on it.
Mm-hmm.
And life starts ignorant and grows into a more intelligent life and makes bounds over science.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start get curious about their solar system and their universe and start going out with spaceships to check out new civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the same darn thing.
Yeah.
We're going to make a space journey here to Mars, and we already know that you know, there was some kind of species on Mars that it had a cataclysmic event, lost its atmosphere. We're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So how could it not be doing it to us? How could there not be alien species out there that are doing it for with us? And we are taking it seriously as a nation, mm-hmm. as a world. We want to be part of the trade that aliens have because we keep wanting to get all of the scientific achievements.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I believe that. Absolutely. The one thing that keeps bothering me...
Uh-oh.
Is about our soul. I mean, I'm not particularly spiritual in the normal sense.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever you talk... Whatever you call that part of yourself that will separate from your body and still have a conscience,
mm-hmm.
whether it's your soul or just consciousness after death, that's real. In my book, it's absolutely real.
Mm-hmm.
We do separate from our shell. And when we do, what happens to the soul? What if that's what the soul is? What, you know, we all want to know what happens after death, right?
Right.
So, if aliens are in fact lining up to take our souls because they're rare in the universe and they want to put them into their hybrids, that is interesting to me, mm-hmm. and worrisome because... Who's manufacturing the souls? Was there a finite amount when the world, the whole, what we call our universe, expanded and became the way it is?
Mm-hmm.
If there's a finite amount of souls, then what's going into the newborns?
Right.
So if we have a system of reincarnation on this planet, then when you die and you leave your shell and you're in line for a reincarnation and you get reincarnated, that soul or consciousness would go with the new body.
Mm-hmm.
It seems the reason if that's true. But if an alien takes your soul, that is going to... eventually leave us without souls, and there would be no birth, there mm-hmm. would be no people, there would be people empty of souls. That can't be. Without a consciousness, you can't wipe your own butt.
Right.
I mean, let's face it, you are what you think you are. So I have some concerns. There's some science there that I'm not really sure of. So over the weekend, I went in kind of deep on science for near-death experiences.
Ooh.
I wanted to know if there were any real science advancements on understanding what happens when a body turns off, the human body turns off, the brain is denied oxygen, and the body believes it's dying.
Mm-hmm.
What does it do? Well, it expels this inner soul. It says, okay, I release you. I have nothing to hold on to you with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not conscious in your body for, you know, X amount of time, then I have nothing to hold on to you with. So then you've got this soul that... scientists have found that people can do really interesting things when their body thinks they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, you know, you would say, well, what is a near-death experience? And it occurs when someone has limited brain function or no brain function.
Well, that could be me right now, then.
We're not talking about sleepy malfunctions. We're talking about you know, lights out. You're not conscious.
Okay.
Your brain is not getting any oxygen. You've had an EEG, and the EEG says that you have no brain function. Okay? That's a near-death... If you wake up again, that's called a near-death experience. If you don't wake up again, it's called death.
Yeah.
Okay? So, it's a... If you're able to still have a sensory experience without the full use of your physical senses, if the soul is taken away from the body, then the soul is free to look around, see what's in the room that they're in,
mm-hmm.
see their family members out in the waiting room, go out on a ledge and find a shoe and then come back because you've been, you know, defibrillated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these things have happened. People have seen things in the room like plaid shoelaces.
Right.
And said, hey, you know, there was a nurse in here with plaid shoelaces when I was being worked on. Sure enough, that's true.
Or on different floors, like conversations being had
Absolutely.
By family members when
Yes.
they were in the cafeteria.
Exactly. That's true. Even smell.
Hmm.
The ability to smell the brownies in the kitchen three floors down.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, how do you make that into a scientific hypothesis? How do you do that? So you can make that subject experiences studied by taking each near-death experience patient and document every single one of them. And then you ask the witnesses to verify if that was true or not. The ones that were in the room, like the doctors and nurses and technicians
mm-hmm.
and technologists and everybody else that can go into that room. Or there are people that were waiting outside, family members who were talking, you know, amongst themselves, the conversations they were having, if that was true. There's so many ways to check up on this. And what the scientists are finding, and these are real live doctor scientists, this is what they do for a living, they're finding that near-death experience is absolutely true.
Really?
How does an individual, while they're being worked on, manage to roam all over a hospital or their house or outside of their house or up in the air and be able to look down? Who's never been on a plane and can explain everything from a high amount of altitude? So yes, you can technically pull this all apart and study it, make graphs, scales.
Okay, well, let's pick this apart. More with the near-death experience coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Johnny Manson here, along with MUFON investigator Cherie DeSouce, talking about near-death experiences. And Cherie, since you're the scientist, what does the science say?
So some of the peer-reviewed studies included an additional 30% had some sense of consciousness. There's always a small percent, not real small sometimes, but it's like 30% or less that I've seen, that have a near-death experience. Not everybody has one.
Right.
And that we don't know why yet. We don't know why. The one that interests me the most was that 80% of blind respondents who had a near-death experience, regardless if they were blind by birth or became blind over the years, they were all able to see. Now, how does a blind person who's never seen anything see and be able to tell you what a car looks like?
Right.
Yeah. That just screams to me that, you know, there's some legitimacy here. And you can verify your details. So that's what scientists are most interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not just physical reactions. The study done by Dr. Parnia concludes that known physical explanations do not account for visual awareness, clarity of thought, and positive emotions associated with NDEs, near-death experiences. So what does it mean? The most conservative interpretation of NDEs is that some aspect of human consciousness is non-physical and continues after the physical death. Most people call that a soul. If you break it down, the scientists are using EEGs indicating that there's an absence of electrical activity in the cerebral cortex. When the body ceases to function of the conscious level, there's another part of us that takes over, separate from the body, that has a consciousness. And it's us. It's not another human, an alien. It is us. If we've been living in the shell of this body, whatever feelings and emotions and family that we have, that's still the same. They match up. They pair. So you don't have, like, some kind of schizophrenic alien presence in you at all. It's just you without the bod. A near-death experience, if you have the limited brain function, if you're having an experience without senses, despite the inability to process sensory information, patients describe events, feelings, and sensations. So when you have your senses and your body's dying and you're not in it, so you feel there's like this overwhelming feeling of love.
I saw that it was all unconditional love. It was as if not just, you know, the being that held me, but the entire universe was saying, look how much we've loved you. Look how much we've supported you. Look how we've honored your life. Look how we've allowed you to go and learn and choose and grow and be
filled to overflowing with infinite unconditional love of that creator all through eternity and infinity and higher dimensional space.
It was a joy, this amazing love. It was this bursting of reunion with the most loving entities.
And I've tried to think of adjectives to describe this, the intensity of this love, you know, unconditional, pure, powerful. The only one that I can think of that works is infinite.
A sense of love I had never experienced in my life.
Where I did experience the blissful return to love.
Had such presence and such love to it.
Even if all they do is touch briefly, glimpse that unconditional love, it changes their life forever.
And it was absolutely unconditional love. So everything I saw was very, very loving. It was perfect.
Love is the coin of that realm.
I felt my legs filling with this light, this presence, this love, this infinite unity.
I was so happy. I was so filled with joy and love that I thought my face would break.
And this overwhelming sense of completeness, cherishness, it's not a real word, but feeling cherished, unconditional love.
That unconditional love that goes far beyond the phrase, far beyond those words.
So powerful and so absorbing. Wave after wave after wave of cleansing white love washing over me.
And I felt this enormous peace just floating.
Part of what I had access to was this universal love, or we could, if we could say God, I felt this love of God toward myself.
that I was absolutely loved unconditionally. The only one that didn't know myself was me. God knew me perfectly.
I had never felt that kind of love ever.
And swirling in this beautiful river of love and color and life beyond description.
God was loving me right through it.
And I came to see the power of that love.
There's that white light with the love, love flowing into you. Many people have a life review.
What I experienced was my life and what had happened in my life. And I saw all the things in my life that were beautiful, all the things that were painful, all the things that I judged as mistakes.
All the judgments I had entertained in the life review were mine. And as I let them go, I actually was able to release closer and closer to this light.
I also was shown a life review.
I did a life review.
I had a life review.
Is that you go through every bit of your life, all the crucial parts that are there to teach you about the lessons of good and bad, to help you.
In my life review, it was just so incredibly loving.
And then my life review.
I had what many people have called a kind of a life review.
And we have to feel the power of our decisions. So if we lived a life handing out pain and suffering to others, we have to feel that in that life review.
We talked about how you can verify it scientifically in a near-death experience. Because people can see and hear what's going on around them, for them to remember that dream or that experience shows that their consciousness is operating independently of their physical body. There are four significant peer-reviewed studies that provide meaningful, verifiable evidence of the survival of human consciousness after clinical death, strengthening the case for the transphysical nature of NDEs. A four-year study of over 2,000 patients with cardiac arrest found that 9% of the survivors, that's 185 patients, had an NDE. An additional 30%, 618 patients, had some sense of postmortem consciousness and maintained visual awareness for up to 3 minutes after cardiac arrest. They're finding people aren't dead when we think they're dead. The science of near-death experiences was started in earnest by the longitudinal study of the near-death experiences of 344 cardiac patients in 10 Dutch hospitals. It found that 62 adult patients, roughly 1 out of 5, experienced an NDE with some typical characteristics. No patients reported distressing or frightening NDEs. And that kind of brings up an interesting thought. I mean, there are people who believe that they're going to go to hell because maybe they murdered somebody or, you know, they broke some of the Ten Commandments that thou shalt not do. So, and then we talked about the ones, the blind respondents that claimed to be able to see during their NDEs or OBEs, their out-of-body experience. So, anoxia. If scientists try to explain away NDEs. They try to say, no, no.
It's just your brain doing this. It's not real.
Know,
and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, they're non-accepting. Anoxia, a lack of oxygen, hypothesis by Susan Blakemore. She just says that a dying brain could lead to the firing of neurons responsible for visual perception. If this is true, then 100% of patients should have an NDE or OBE under such conditions, but only 18% do of seeing the white light at the end of the tunnel. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say the brain is giving you a visual every time. Well, it doesn't. Different things happen to different people. So that hypothesis kind of went by the way of the dodo bird.
This being was all-knowing. It knew everything that, was going to happen and will happen and the reasons behind them. There was a perfect justice.
It was such intelligence that understood everything. And at the same time, no matter what I had done wrong, and there were things I had done wrong in my life, that energy, that intelligence just accepted me the way I am, just loved me the way I am.
And then I found myself in front of a light. The light was like about 1,000 suns. I felt unconditional love. Like I talk about, I could see love, I could hear love, I could touch love, I could taste love, and I could smell love. There was love all around. It's very hard to describe it.
I felt absolutely wrapped in love. I felt completely at peace.
And it was loving me. It was just pouring out this unconditional love at me.
Narcotically induced. Hey, we all appreciate narcotics when we're in pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all know what they can do. It will induce a sense of being out of body. Well, that's for sure. Ketamine does. The images of the hallucination were weird and perspectives were exaggerated. Again, weird perceptions are contrary to the lucid and accurate descriptions found by the studies of near-death experiences. You know, as much as your brain starts to go into this kind of fog,
mm-hmm.
To release you from the pain, you don't pay attention to detail like you do when you're in a near-death experience. So that, too, is checked off. Electrical surge to the brain. They explain that this falls into the category of an OBE, out-of-body experience, when you give someone an electrical shock. The abnormal body experiences and a false sense of reality, legs growing shorter and seeing body doubles, contrary to the experience of an NDE. So that doesn't work either. An electrical surge basically disrupts your ability to see things clearly.
I saw in front of me start to envelop this light. Couldn't tell the distance to the light.
Which was totally blinding light, yet I could look at it.
It's like walls of illuminated light, a brilliance I had never seen in my life.
Was this slowly spinning white light.
Pretty soon the light was shining on top of me, like rays were falling on me. This light, that was the best experience I had ever had in my life.
In this moment, there was an explosion of light
and a feeling of such joy and overwhelming ecstasy being in this illumination of light.
That came towards me, a very clear and pure light that had fine white and gold tendrils off of it.
When we hit the light, when we entered this light.
And I marveled at this ball because it was infinite.
And all of a sudden it starts to grow and everything is illuminated in this light.
And saw a limb of light.
I did become aware of a point of white light, intense, brilliant, gajillion times brighter than the sun, a little point of white light, and it was absolutely beautiful. It was alive. It was like breathing.
I'm overwhelmed by the feeling of being in this light.
It was so bright, so powerful that it was beyond light.
It's everything I can see is the light and the feeling of it.
When people come back, they have been shown to be very changed.
Right.
He says, okay, it's time for you to go back. And I turned around. I'm sorry, but he put his arms around me. He put his arms around me. And it was a feeling that I can't explain. It was unconditional love, but it was words. I can't tell you the words. And I'm sorry, but I always act like this because I can feel it again. So, it changed my life.
Here are some credible stories of near-death experiences as far as science is concerned. Some transphysical component leaves the body, but does not go immediately to another worldly domain. Instead, it remains in the resuscitation room or somewhat near the body.
My energy accumulated into a sort of a cloud-like space above my body.
Initially, I found myself suspended.
I was in a position where I was up in the ceiling again, looking down.
The next thing I realize is I'm now floating up into the corner of the room, and I'm now looking down on me in this bed with people working on me.
I was above my body in an emergency room while the team of emergency staff, police, and everyone was trying to help bring me back to life.
Sometimes light just shoots away from the body and goes straight up. We actually have film of such occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
So virtually every peer-reviewed study reports multiple instances of such veridical data. Here are some veridical near-death experiences reported in these studies. One man who had been in a deep coma later told a nurse that he recognized her and saw where she had placed his dentures during resuscitation efforts. He even described the cart where she placed them. They were there, precisely as he described it.
As I was floating above my body, at the time I wasn't sure it was my body, but later I realized that is me down there. I wound up knowing everything about everybody in the room, which I found fascinating.
And I thought, well, that's so strange. How can this possibly be them talking about me when I'm right here?
I came to a floor that had a lot of patients in one room. And I wound up knowing everything about them, who was dying and when, who was going home, who was having a party when they did go home.
The orthopedic surgeon and the neurosurgeon had a conversation which I watched and listened to. And they were talking about the fact that too much time was passing and that they needed to do something.
And the doctor was very distraught. And I recall him saying, if I lose this one, I will quit. I can't handle this anymore.
I think we talked about the shoe on the ledge once. Melvin Morse and Kim Clark reported a woman who had knowledge of a shoe on a window ledge outside of the hospital.
Because she saw it when she was flying around, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And on the third floor. The psychologist who interviewed the woman had to crawl along the ledge outside to verify the claim. The shoe was indeed there precisely as the patient had described it. The only way she, the patient, could have had such a perspective was if she had been floating right outside and at very close range to the tennis shoe. I retrieved the shoe and brought it back to Maria. It was very concrete evidence for me. This is a psychologist.
I wasn't alone.
I was greeted by a being of some sort, a spirit. He knew me. By the way, it was a masculine presence.
A man who I, for some reason, felt that he was like a mentor or a teacher from how I sensed him.
And I did experience what I call benevolent spirits. Angels, as we call them.
And she looked at me with this very loving smile that transcends any of our words of love and our uses of romantic love or the love of parent and child, any of the kind of love that we have here, love for all of humanity. This is the love that transcends it all, is that unconditional love that we encounter there.
Once I was in this space, then she smiled at me and she opened her arms.
One of these beings steps forward, the one on the end on the left steps forward, and he speaks to me, and I'm saying he because he felt male, he felt fatherly, he felt protective, he felt caring and kind and loving.
And then I heard a voice, and the voice was very authoritative.
It would take a really narrow mind to criticize anybody that says they had an experience like that, especially someone who is as educated as a neurosurgeon.
Right.
Yeah. There's just proof everywhere. In the hospital waiting room, we talked about that. Raymond Moody reports similar stories of veridical out-of-body experiences, including those who travel through walls to the waiting room where they see their relatives or their friends. And then one patient reported seeing her young daughter wearing mismatched plaids, which was highly unusual. Another woman overheard her brother-in-law talking to a business associate in the hospital waiting room in a very derogatory manner and was able to report this back to him later. You get validated. David Bryce Grayson, Department of Psychiatric Medicine at the University of Virginia, reported one woman's accurate description of the plaid shoelaces on a nurse participating in a resuscitation. Another patient from Dr. Grayson's study accurately described of his cardiac surgeon flapping his arms as if trying to fly during his open heart surgery. Having spent most of my 42 years in an operating room doing open heart surgeries, doctors are known to do all kinds of weird and funny things during surgeries. Especially if they're waiting for drugs to be put in and they have to stand there and they start moving around and rolling their shoulders and tap dancing or whatever else.
Stretching.
Right. Yeah. Given this kind of evidence of NDEs, it kind of makes you ask the question, if we're able to see, hear, touch, smell, I don't know about the touching part, but I hear that people can feel rough exteriors. I don't know if that's something they perceive and think they're feeling or basically they're feeling, right? What does that say about the afterlife? Do you have to go somewhere? Or could you just stay here?
Some say they were offered to stay but could go back. But then we hear stories of people being reincarnated, like the kid that could recite all these different things that they shouldn't know about World War II planes and things.
Oh,
and
that little boy. He right. knew exactly the plane he flew,
right.
the name of the plane, his best friend.
Right. They found out who he was.
Yeah. They actually knew who he was.
So living the life that you've lived, which seems like a pretty full life, if you were given the chance at death to come back reincarnated, a rebirth, started all over, would you? Or would you say, nah, I think I'm going to stay here wherever this is. I'm just going to stay here and just be fine. Would you come back to Earth?
I would have to say 100% yeah, I'd come back.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm too curious of a soul.
Yeah.
I couldn't just, you know, all that love and being around family and friends or not. I'm not sure about all that, but yeah, I'd come back. I'd want to know what happens.
Well, if they answer every question, if that's true.
True,
like
yeah.
every question is answered, everything of everything you know or can know. I mean, you wouldn't have any questions because you'd already know it, right?
That's true.
And all the people that have, your family that have passed, if they stayed, you would have them.
Yeah.
Or you could watch over them if that's in the cards, because it seems to be in the cards that your family are with you that have gone beyond, right?
Unless they decided they were going to get reincarnated.
Like reincarnated, right?
Yeah.
So I'd want to stay. It's like, I don't want to deal with that anymore.
Oh, you're cute.
No more.
Okay, I feel you on that. What I understand about reincarnation is that the same people that are in your life now,
yeah.
the same souls, come back with you.
Yeah.
You're a package deal.
Oh. So that's the problem.
So I'm thinking, if that's true,
yeah.
You change sexes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can. You don't have to, but
right.
you could come back as a man. I could.
Right.
You could come back as a young woman.
Right.
I
would be pretty hot, too.
Yes, you would. And you'd give those poor men a run for their money.
I would be a hot number. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to know more about near-death experiences, if you want to yell at us and call us a bunch of tinfoil hat-wearing whack jobs, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.